Welcome to We've Got Issues. I'm Joshua Holland. This week we're going to speak to Oliver Willis, a favorite regular guest. But first, of course, I'm joined by Elizabeth Preza, Alternet's Managing Editor. How are you, Eliz?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm trying to hang on. I've got a bad case of COVID brain.
It's a real thing.
COVID brain is real. I was just saying before we started that on Tuesday I watched TV. I sat down and I tried to watch a movie, and what I did all night basically is watch the first 25 minutes of 9 different movies, and then I'd get bored and distracted, and I'd be like, I'd have no idea what's going on, and right. I'd bail out.
Well, then you got a really interesting movie out of those 9.
It was eclectic. It was an eclectic movie. Yeah, I sat there for like 4 hours. I'm so sick of watching TV. I'm so sick of it all. Yeah. And I mean, and look, we're in a situation where we're getting another real spike. This is a bad wave coming. It's going to be mixed up with flu season. It's going to get dark and cold, and people are going to be indoors spreading this terrible disease around. And
it's going to be really bad.
It's going to be terrible. And all the public health experts are like, brace yourselves. This is going to be a fucking nightmare. So, Yep. You should get some. If you're prone to seasonal affective disorder, consider getting some spectrum lighting.
I have a big blue light that I sit by in the winter.
Yeah. Does it help?
Yeah, it does. Surprisingly, because it seems stupid, but it does help.
I mean, it's science. It's just science.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like, you have to like sit by this lamp for like an hour. You're just like, okay, cool.
And I used to live in Berlin, and we would literally have like 8 months a year, maybe not 8 months, but it's like 6 months a year where it would be like damp and dark, and it would just like, it wouldn't rain in a significant way. It would just kind of sprinkle for 6 months. It was depressing.
Yeah. Really seasonal affective disorder is real. That's a bad feeling.
It is bad. And now we're going to be stuck indoors. It's terrible. I'm thinking of buying a home gym.
Probably a good idea.
I feel like that. I've put on like 16 pounds since all of this started.
I read that weights are extremely expensive to buy now.
Everybody is jacking up their prices. It's a classic scarcity situation. Anyway, we should probably talk about politics.
Sure. We have issues.
We've got issues. It's the name of the show. So Borat. Will Borat save the Republic?
I've always been banking on him doing that.
You were counting on.
Yeah.
You know, you heard it here. Liz Preza, she called it like last year. She said, Borat's probably going to save us. First, it was Mueller.
When Mueller failed, Borat.
When Mueller failed, it had to be Borat.
And anyway, I would watch that movie.
Yeah. So I'm sure everybody knows that Borat apparently has caught Rudy Giuliani in a compromising situation.
With like his pants literally down.
It's so gross.
I saw the pictures, and it's just the most intimate view of Rudy Giuliani, and one nobody asked for.
No, you can't unsee that. Maureen Dowd tweeted that she had seen the whole scene. We're recording this. Does it premiere tomorrow? I think it premieres tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're recording this on Thursday. By the time you listen to the show, you may have seen the movie, but Maureen Dowd tweeted out that she saw the video, the segment, and it's much worse than we think, which is hard to believe. And I don't know. It's funny because Rudy's defense is that he was just tucking his shirt in,
down on his back, tucking his shirt in.
I mean, it is Seinfeldian, right? Like, I just, when he said this, I kept thinking of I was in the pool. It's shrinkage, right? Shrinkage. I was tucking. It's such a Costanza kind of thing.
Yeah.
Maybe totally. Maybe Jeffrey Toobin should have used the tucking excuse.
Oh, no kidding. Man, I just really don't want any of these guys. Nether regions discussed in any capacity ever. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, I hear you. Let's move on. Let's not even talk about that.
Well, it is part of a bigger like Rudy Giuliani meltdown that we've been seeing.
Yes, I mean this whole Hunter Biden thing has just unraveled in such a dramatic and obvious way. And oh, by the way, Glenn Greenwald over at The Intercept is having an absolute meltdown that the media is not taking this non-troversy seriously.
There's so, something full circle about that, I think.
It's sad what's happened to Glenn. Glenn was on my old show many times, and you know, we had fruitful debates, but then he appears to have lost his mind, and it is sad. It is sad. Anyway, let's see, what else do we have here? There. Oh, Trump is whining. Trump released his 60 Minutes interview with Leslie Stahl today on Facebook.
Right.
And he is, you know, I said this on Twitter, to call Trump a whiny little bitch is insulting to whiny little bitches, I think. Because this is just, it's next level whiny bitchiness. Did you watch any of this? I just watched the first few minutes.
I just watched whatever the lead up was before he cut her off.
Yeah, no, I watched both of those. I watched the first few minutes, then I watched before he walked out. And according to reports, some people sat and watched the whole thing. And I may do so on Sunday. I don't know if I don't have anything better to do. But he posted this thing as if it is evidence of, you know, all of his grievances about the press being so unfair and treating him so mean. And there was nothing to it. She starts off by saying, you know, are you ready for some tough questions? And he's like, nope.
No, thank you.
And then he's fucking fetching because she didn't mention the hard questions when they set up the interview. And he says again and again, you didn't ask Joe Biden hard questions. And she's like, I've never interviewed Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Just, I mean, for somebody who commands so many people's, like, you know, godlike status, he plays the victim card so much. I mean, it's just like the card that he plays.
You know, I mean, this is the weird thing. It's the paradox of Trump.
Right.
He invests so much in being an alpha man, always wants to appear strong. And then he's just bitching and moaning all the time. Oh, everybody's so unfair to me.
Yeah.
It is so opposite of the strong alpha male, right?
Right. Like,
be stoic, dude. Be stoic, you know? My grandfather fought from Italy all the way to Germany, you know? He never whined like you do.
Yeah, about everything. He just he's
never
big,
complained.
Big baby all what the time.
Baby, Jesus. And look, he's so bad at politics. He's so bad at politics. This week, he at one of his rallies, he told the audience, I don't want to be here.
Yeah, in Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania. Like, I don't want to be here. And he complained. Yeah. He complained. And then he was like, it's so cold. And then he cut the rally short.
I think it's interesting, too, because we're seeing, like, Mitch McConnell, right, like, say he's not going to take up the stimulus deal, which is something that Trump has been pushing for, because obviously politically it's a good idea for Trump to get something like that done before Election Day. It's not going to happen because Mitch McConnell's not going to make it happen. And I think it's just interesting to see, like, the power dynamic play out while people are like, oh, this ship is sinking. I'm out of here.
Yeah, you're seeing definitely some rats fleeing from the sinking ship.
Too late, babies. Stay on it. Ugh, what a shit show the last 4 years have been.
Yeah. And this week has been another one of those weeks. How often have we said this? Like, you know, he's always melting down. But this week, it seems like he's melting down even more.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, and we say it over and over again because he keeps finding new bottoms. That's the thing. He keeps plumbing new depths.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of being terrible at politics, he told Leslie Stahl that he wants to get rid of the ACA.
Right. Yes. No, he absolutely does. That's been a
like the Democrats are like, we just want to run on healthcare and we're going to focus all of our opposition.
It's a pandemic, people. I'm so confused. Man, I live for the day where we can just stop talking about this man. It'll never happen. It's literally never going to happen.
Maybe the worst, speaking of Trump being terrible at politics, this week at another of his Nuremberg rallies, by the way, there were only 8 or so actual Nuremberg rallies. He's doing them every night. he said at another one, if Joe Biden is elected, it'll be boring. And I was like, oh my God, like Joe Biden needs to cut a commercial with this.
Oh yeah, that would be some good marketing on their behalf.
I mean, it was the best closing argument for Joe Biden that you can imagine. Just, you want a presidency that you don't have to think about all the time, right?
Who wants to talk about them all the time? I don't want to talk about them.
President should operate in the background. Should be like one of those applications that just goes in the background. You don't have to look at it all the time.
Yeah. And I think it's like a different perspective, because I think that people who support Donald Trump see him at, they like the fact that he's like, rah, rah, I'm a cheerleader. America. I'm going to just vomit America all over the world. Yeah. And I am just like, I don't want that. That's not what I want in a president.
I mean, they're entertained by him. Although I have to say, it does seem like even the cult getting a little bored of the same lines.
It's the same thing all the time.
Yeah, he hasn't said anything new since 2018.
Oh, God. Before that.
Speaking of grievances, they are pre-complaining about the debate, which will be tonight. Are you going to watch?
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm off work at 2 p.m. today, and I am not signing on.
You're doing day drinking.
Yes. I've got a pitcher of margaritas waiting for me.
Honestly, I don't know. I have not missed a presidential debate since, you know what? I don't think you were even born. If I'm honest, it was Dukakis. I've watched them all since Dukakis.
Okay.
Versus the first George Bush.
Okay. I've seen clips of that one, if it's helpful at all.
It's not a good debate. It wasn't a good debate. But my point is, like, you know, it's just something, you know, I'm a political junkie. It's a big event. There's only a few of them.
I usually love
every debates. 4 years.
I usually love them.
We'll see. I don't have to watch it for work. But anyway, they're complaining about the moderator. They're complaining about the fact that they're going to cut off the mics
for
2 minutes. Just these fucking whiners.
I have and I've asked this about like two Trump supporters before. Like I just can't get on board with like agreeing that he's a victim. He's the president of the United States. He's the most powerful person in the world. Explain to me how it doesn't gross you out to hear him play the victim card.
This guy was making $200,000 from his father's tax fraud scheme as a 3-year-old.
He's not a victim.
He was a millionaire at age 8. He has always been just a privileged little shit. And he is basically the opposite of a victim.
And
with that, let's move along. Oliver Willis is a great guest, and we're going to take a quick break and come right back to talk to him about all of this. Stay tuned.
Salvar, no te puedes tú negar. Yo le contesté a la par, le dije no sé nadar. Yo te voy a enseñar y nos vamos a embriagar.
Welcome back. I'm still Joshua Holland, and I'm joined now by Oliver Willis. Oliver is a senior writer at American Independent, The American Independent, I guess, and that's AmericanIndependent.com.
Yep.
Oliver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. I have been lobbying Oliver off in the background to get another dog.
Look, even though the one I have is a little tiny one, it's a handful. I don't know if I can be a quote unquote dog dad to more than one dog. Plus, I also think my dog's going to get like jealous if I get another dog. I don't know.
I was worried about that, but honestly, it just made our bond stronger. And I'll tell you this. First of all, it's not twice as much work to have two dogs. But the other thing is, I think that we're kind of indoctrinated. If we're city people or suburban people, we're raised to believe that one dog is the default number. Like, you know, you have a family dog, but they're pack animals. They're happy to have company. Anyway,
I have to subvert the paradigm. Right?
I think you have to think hard about it. And you know, like it'll be a playmate. It's good to have a playmate.
It'll make my Twitter feed better. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oscar and I go way back. I guess we met in 2004. We're both at the time OG bloggers, and I don't know, at the time we thought that George Bush was the most catastrophic president. Yeah, right? It just couldn't get any dumber, and that the media could not do a poorer job.
poor naive fool. I want to go in a time machine and go back to myself and just be like, wait, it's going to get so much worse. It's going to get a little better in between, but yeah. It's going to get so much worse. And you don't even know, you think this stuff with Bush is really bad. There's a dumber one coming. There is another, like in Star Wars, but a really twisted inverted Star Wars where there is another. Yeah.
The long arc of dirt.
Yeah, exactly. I had a former coworker, that used to say, the dirt cannot be created or destroyed. It just increases in volume, but it's the same amount throughout time. And I used to say, I thought we were destroying the dirt. And he's like, no, it's just kind of like laying dormant, ready to strike again. So that's
there is no peak dirt. It is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Yep.
All right. So you tweeted the other day that in your most pessimistic map of the 2020 election had Biden getting 279 electoral college votes. Of course, you need 270 to win the presidency. And I found that odd because normally I feel like you're more pessimistic than I am. And my worst map has, Trump sneaking into a second term. My second worst map has a 269-269 tie. So are you thinking that reporters are afraid to say the obvious, which is that all indications suggest that we are headed towards a comfortable victory for Joe Biden?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't go that far because I was the guy running around in 2016 saying, Hillary's got it. Hillary's got it. Don't worry about it. Everything is fine. So I'm a little gun shy like everybody else. I guess my thing is that I'm cautiously optimistic. Right.
Yeah.
And well, especially, that's right. Especially after 2018, because in 2018, I was really apprehensive. And then the polls turned out to be pretty right. And I mean, if you look at even the national poll, which I mean, yes, the popular vote doesn't matter as much, but it was pretty accurate in 2016. It was off by I think it was, maybe 1.5%. And if you look at the margins now, I'm just looking at all the numbers and I keep looking for data to prove myself wrong. I'm look for the bad data, look for the bad data. And I'm really not seeing it overall. There's some states that are kind of sketchy, Ohio, is kind of one of those sketchy states. But if you just look at the numbers, even if you look at the numbers where Trump is really winning and he's really kicking ass, he's still not doing as well as he used to. So that to me, it just kind of cumulatively looks like, I would be cautiously optimistic is my stance on it. And that's how I feel. When I see these southern states, I don't really feel strong about the southern states. I live here in Florida. I'm really sketchy about Florida just because,
Yeah, for good reason.
Yeah. So Georgia, I don't know about. I think they're going to, even if we win Georgia, I think Georgia's going to get stolen. But even so, I just went through and I ran the states myself trying to be as unbiased as possible. And that was my pessimistic scenario still had Biden winning 279. Hopefully it's more than that. The numbers seem to say it's going to be much more than that. And that would be my joy. I want to crush him. But yeah. I'm just saying, that's what I'm seeing.
Well, also a significant margin is key to stymieing his whole plot, which is to capitalize on chaos and uncertainty with his conspiracy theories about voter fraud, et cetera, et cetera. I should point out that I also look at all numbers. And one thing that I've noticed that not a lot of people have talked about is that, as consistent as the head-to-head polling between Trump and Biden has been, so has the so-called generic congressional ballot. This doesn't ask about specific candidates. This says, if the election were held today, would you vote for the Democrat or the Republican for your congressional district? So it isn't as prone to, the kind of things
that some noise. People talk about,
or shy Trump voters, things like that, right? You're not even talking about a candidate. So there's no stigma attached to saying, I'm going to vote for the Republican. And it is, it has consistently been over 6.5 points in 538's average. It's 7.4 points. That is, the Democratic lead is 7.4 points today. And I think they ended in 2018 at 8 something. So we're close to 2018 margins. Of course, none of this factors in voter suppression,
right?
Messing with ballots or a partisan courts, right?
Right, and I mean,
be cautious.
Yeah, that's the part that that's the part that gives me worry going ahead, and that's the part where I'm like, and strange because that's the side of it that I think is most removed from Trump. So in a strange way, it's actually the most competent part of the Republican election effort. It's not like Trump himself is just sort of just, rolling out there, hitting at everything, punching himself in the face about 60-70% of the time. But like the voter suppression stuff, within the states and in Texas, the Texas governor and in the other states that are run by Republicans in Georgia, like those are sort of those are almost like your old school Republican suppression. Like, you talked about, when both of us were under the Bush administration, like the Bush people to me are competent evil and the Trump people are chaotic evil. And like the state governments are kind of like the competent evil side of the current Republican Party. So that's the part I worry about. You could even have the scenario where like Trump loses, but we lose some of these like really close races, like the South Carolina race, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Those are the ones I'm worried about.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm worried about all of it, but that is the big concern of mine. And you're right, as inept as they are at governing, that's how like together they are about voter suppression. And it's, it never ceases to amaze me how much effort they put in to cementing, entrenching minority rule, as opposed to developing a popular agenda and trying to appeal to people and winning over. And they could. This is one of the things that I think is
it's crazy.
I mean, it's a delusion among Republicans that they could never make inroads with, the Hispanic population, Asian American voters. It's a delusion.
It's one of the most squandered. I think it's one of the most squandered opportunities in all of American politics. Like for years, I've said, as a black person speaking to the black community, like I would prefer if the black vote was up for, between either party. Like I think it would be better overall for black people if one party wasn't openly racist and both parties were saying, look,
competing.
Here's our agenda. You guys decide, as a black community, as individual black people, individual Latinos, which party's better for you? And we're going to take away the racism. And you guys go, do you want, low taxes or do you want a larger social safety net? Decide. But instead, Republicans, because they're holding on to this Reagan base, they've been holding on to this Reagan base for almost as long as you and I have been alive, Josh. They've been holding on to this base that's dying. It's literally, like, I don't even want to come across as mean. They are dying. These are dying people. And to keep on these people, they just embrace wholehearted racism, which just turns off. The biggest growing part of America is turned off from the Republican Party because they're just so damn racist.
Yeah. And they're caught between a rock and a hard place, because if they did reach out to a more diverse electorate, if they did acknowledge modernity, they would alienate their hardcore base. And they know it. They know it. So, I mean, it's we would prefer that there was more,
but
their voters don't.
But I think the interesting thing was, if you go back to the Karl Rove days, like Karl Rove understood that, like his whole thing was, let's get Latinos, let's get some blacks. And Rove understood that, like, I guess in the Trump era, they don't really get is that you don't have to win those groups. But no. if you cut off enough from the Democrats and then you cobble that together with your sort of moderate, moderate Republicans, and you don't go to like crazy racist land and you sort of give up the crazy racist votes, cobbling together that coalition is actually bigger than what you turn off by going with the racist. But it's easy to go with the racist. And that's why, Trump does it. And then, Democratic turnout goes down and then they end up, they have two presidents in a row. Not in a row, but two Republican presidents that have "quote unquote" won, but they didn't actually win a majority of the votes. I know. I hate to be that guy. That's the downer. I always end up being the downer guy. But it's like. I mean, when you look at it, like the two Democratic presidents actually won most of the votes in the last 20 years, and the two Republican presidents, at least in their first term and hopefully Trump's only term, didn't. And it's like, they need the system to be broken to win. And that just shows you why they put so much money into voter suppression, because they're like, if the system works as intended, they cannot win.
I mean, we should also acknowledge the role that the conservative media plays in this, because they really could not pivot to a more moderate, inclusive agenda without getting exoriated by this apparatus that they've spent billions of dollars at developing, which ensures and enforces a kind of fealty to this hard right framework. I mean, you are someone who certainly monitors the right wing media more than I do.
The interesting thing about that too is that, I mean, the biggest part of that right wing media is Fox News, and Roger Ailes, who created Fox News, he actually kind of understood this sort of like on a Karl Rove level of like, we can't always be with the crazies and we have to expand beyond the crazies. But sort of what's happened right now is that this sort of, you know, Fox News launched in 96, and this sort of 24-year experiment has resulted in Donald Trump, who is like the Frankenstein's monster of this, because Trump watches Fox News, and I say he's the first Republican presidential candidate to actually believe Fox News. Like, yes. The other ones understood Fox is a tool, just use Fox. Mitt Romney's not a dumb guy. Mitt Romney doesn't believe what's on Fox News. Trump thinks Fox News is the actual news. And so they get caught in this feedback loop where Trump is responding to the craziness on Fox, whereas like Mitt Romney would not do that. Like, I mean, I can't stand Mitt Romney. I think he would have been a terrible president, but Mitt Romney would not be watching, you know, a riot in Portland and saying Antifa is blowing up cities all over the country. Like, Mitt's not that dumb guy. Trump is the guy that watches that, and then Fox has to keep feeding him because Fox's base gets angry at them if they don't go along with Trump. Whereas with another Republican president, like, you know, when Bush was in the White House, they knew to like, okay, let's go crazy, but let's not get too crazy. But right now they're stuck in like a crazy loop, and I think it's actually hurting them, strangely enough.
I mean, it's definitely hurting them. I think this is one of the reasons that Donald Trump is running an awful campaign. It just seems, you know, completely, we talked about this a little bit in the opening, so I'm not going to go too much into it, but he seems inept about just almost incapable of seeing how normal people view politics. Yeah. And he repeatedly, you know, in the debates, in these crazy rallies, he says things that no normal person knows what the fuck he's talking about.
Right. If you don't have the Fox News decoder ring, you can't understand what he's saying. I'm someone that watches, I have to watch almost every Trump rally and speech, right? Like, so I should be pretty fluent in Trumpese. And even I sometimes am like, wait, what is he talking about? And I've got to go and check out Fox and say, oh, that's because he watches. That's the other thing. Like, it's not even like the main stuff on Fox that he'll reference. It's like a record, a music fan who's referencing like the B side and a deep cut on the B side.
He's up at like 3 a.m. watching.
Exactly. And he's like, oh, Judge Jeanine, who's like their weekend show that nobody watches. Judge Jeanine said this thing, and everyone else is like, what? I just listened to the pop hits, you know, the top 10. Like, I don't understand what he's talking about. It's the strangest thing.
I'm always impressed when he stumps Daniel Dale. Daniel Dale is the chronicler of Trump bullshit. And sometimes Daniel Dale is like, okay, I have no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I can't even figure out what he's referencing. Let me shift gears just a little bit. Let me ask you this. So we're both in the camp of urging Democrats to find spine and fight back. There's a lot of things that I would not want Democrats to do in terms of corrupting government agencies,
for sure,
etc. What do you think they should emulate from Donald Trump? What do you think they should learn from this crackpot?
Well, I'll tell you the one thing, the number one thing that Democrats should learn from Donald Trump, and he does this really well, and it seems stupid, and it's employed in service of a stupid cause, but it's taking the victory lap. Democrats have been really, really bad at taking victory laps. President Obama, who I was a big supporter of, and you know, to this day I still remain a supporter of his, he had this attitude of, okay, I'll do something really good, I'll lean back, and the people will understand that I've done this good thing, right? Yeah. And generally what happens in that situation, that vacuum gets filled, not just by Fox News, but by the mainstream media that gets a distorted view of it. That's why it took so long, in my opinion, for Obamacare to have the kind of support that it does now. So Trump has this thing where you'll see him every once in a while. He'll tweet about like, oh, we sent money to an airport in Colorado. We sent money to, you know, lifeguards in New Mexico. You know, isn't that great? Look at what I did. And I think that that, to me, that is the number one thing I would love to see if Biden wins, that, you know, if they pass a budget in the House. And Biden, like, the next day is on Twitter, and he's saying, hey, folks, it's great. We're just going to improve that airport in Scranton. Hey, folks, it's wonderful. I just sent $500 million so that we can rebuild that Navy base in South Carolina. Isn't that great? Look at what I'm doing. Look what I'm doing for you. And that, to me, is, like, the number one thing. Taking a little victory lap, I would love to see Democrats adopt that strategy. That's one of the few things in the Trump arsenal. And it's not even an evil thing. Like, politicians generally do it because you see it in the House and Senate. Like, they issue a press release if they, you know, every ribbon cutting they go to, they issue a press release. I'd like to see it at the presidential level. Take a little bit of a victory lap so people go, oh, progressive policies are actually affecting me in my hometown and doing a popular good thing. Great. You know, that's what I'd like to see.
This was, by the way, my top answer to this question. Other things that I would like to see them do is have much more of a sense of connecting directly with people in a non-staid way, the way Trump does, you know, and I'm not saying to blather ridiculously on Twitter, but, you know, do the way the state of New Jersey has done and have a little, you know, fun on social media, have a presence like that. And most importantly, I think it's important to learn that you can't stop campaigning to govern.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is key to me. And one of my great fears, obviously my biggest fear, is that Trump wins again.
Right.
Or that Mitch McConnell holds the Senate, which would be a nightmare under Biden. But my third ranked fear is that they're going to be mired in, you know, cleanup basically for 2 years.
Blankery.
The Tea Party, the new Tea Party, more vicious, more freaked out about mask mandates, more violent, potentially, will do its thing again. Again, they'll be left with huge debt.
Yep, Republicans will, deficit.
All of a sudden, Republicans will remember that they're against against deficits, and they lose the midterms really badly.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Like, for sure. Like, just you know, Democrats have this mindset, and it's if you actually go back in time, Bill Clinton was actually good at not being like this, but, you know, and he was attacked for it back then, which seems quaint nowadays. But the quote unquote permanent campaign, you know, they're like, oh, you're still running? It's like, yeah, dude, like, this is still politics. I still need to convince people. I still need to, you know, get out there with the people. Like, it's not just, oh, I'm in election mode now. Let me roll up my sleeves and do town halls. It's like, literally, the minute you get in the White House, you're still campaigning. And I have to say, like, this is one of the things where, not to be, you know, not to be too much of an optimist, because I'm generally sort of slightly pessimistic, I guess, about these things.
I think so.
But I know, right? I get that rep. But Biden is actually slightly better at this, I would say, in a lot of ways than President Obama, in that, like, Biden talks more like a normal, you know, quote unquote, normal guy. You know, President Obama has, like, that Vulcan thing. And whereas Biden has a sort of, he's much more like Captain Kirk. He's going to get hot under the collar. He's going to say dumb things. But that's actually, like, especially with coming after Trump, it would be like, Biden saying a dumb thing would sound folksy to people because it's not a belligerent racist thing. Like, I feel like he's reset what it is for a president to sort of make these quote unquote gaffes.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, I think another thing that they need to learn is just to be partisan, right? I mean, this is a divided country. We are not going to come together and sing Kumbaya. So efforts to make that happen are wasted, as far as I'm concerned. There's no payoff for that, except for, you know, maybe Fred Hyatt, or, you know, pundits may like that.
Right. Well, you know my obsession with we could go the whole show with how the West Wing has infected the brain of the Democratic Party.
But I think we went into the West Wing last time. I believe we did, honestly.
but that's what it is. It's Democrats. What Democrats need to start understanding is that progressive stuff is actually bipartisan. And it's this weird click you have to make in your brain, but you're like, I think we as like pundits and people looking on the outside have to show them like, hey, you know that progressive stuff that you think is just the hippy dippy liberals in the party supported? Look at the numbers. You can just say, look at cold hard numbers. Look at, you know, Medicare for all. Look at, you know, the Green New Deal, different ideas like that. You're like, look, these are bipartisan. You know, even though the Republicans don't like them, Republican voters like them a whole lot. And we have to sort of, it's like a mind trick. We have to do a Jedi mind trick on Democratic officials to like convince them that, you know, because they're so obsessed with bipartisanship. You go, yeah, you know, it's bipartisan, raising taxes on really rich people. That's bipartisan.
Yeah, I actually think that data for progress is an important new piece of infrastructure in the same way that Media Matters was 20 years ago or whatever. It is important. And I am optimistic to this degree. With Biden coming in, a lot of people on the left are convinced that he will be follow his inclinations to be centrist and incrementalist. And I think that I believe those are his instincts. And I think that the scope of the crises that he would adopt if he wins makes that impossible. Yeah, I literally think that you cannot pursue a kind of centrist bipartisan course when you are adopting or inheriting a $3 trillion annual budget deficit. You have 30 million people who have lost their jobs. There's a pandemic raging out of control. Millions of people have lost their health insurance. You have to find revenues and you have to spend money. And both of those things are shapeable. You know, once you make the argument, once you win the argument, we're going to spend a pile of money.
Right.
Well, I think progressives have done a good job of shaping how you spend that money. Even going back to 2009, you know, I'm one of those people who criticized Obama for thinking that $1 trillion in stimulus was this magic line that would cause all sorts of nightmares. Honestly, it was any amount of money that a black Democrat authorized. Right. That's what we learned, right? It could have been could have been $47.
Right.
You could have said, we're going to give $47 worth of stimulus.
Too much.
And the fucking tea parties were $47. But, let me just finish. We helped shape how that money was spent very well. It wasn't all in tax breaks. Most of it was in spending. A lot of it was spending on sustainable energy projects, infrastructure, et cetera. And even the tax breaks in the 2009 stimulus package skewed towards real middle class people, working families and stuff like that. It wasn't just, oh, drive a big dump truck up to, like, you know, George Soros and give him all the fucking money, right?
Right. And the thing that's interesting to me with Biden tackling this, right? And like you said, I worry about his sort of, you know, his past of having more centrist impulses. But the one upside I see possibly with Biden is somebody who for what, maybe 30, 40 years, I'm not sure exactly, has wanted to be president of the United States. Like, we know he's run so many times, and he's someone who understands, like, one thing I know about Joe Biden is he understands the scope of history. He understands where an FDR stands historically. Like, he really gets that. If you listen to him speak about this kind of thing, he really gets what the New Deal and how important it was to America. And he understands the scope of the crisis we're in now. And I feel like his inclination, more than his centrist impulses, and this is a little bit combination of what he said plus also like my hopes and dreams that I pour into him, but like I feel like he's kind of the guy that's like, let's go big, let's do this, so that, you know, 25 years from now people are like, hey man, remember that crazy giant thing that Biden did? That's huge. Like, my kids are going to college because of what Biden did back in 2020. This is gigantic. Like, this is the Biden boom. Like, I think he looks at history with a big scope like that. So that's like my one sort of, you know, I want him to, you know, if I were the little devil on his shoulder, I would be saying, do it, Joe, do it, do it, do it, you know, get rid of this centrist nonsense. Who cares about balancing the budget? Like, forget about it, you know, go for it. So that's my one sort of positive viewpoint on, I think that he might really go for it.
I mean, my other source of optimism, and, you know, we should be tempered to some degree with this, but he's going to hire a lot of hands from the Obama administration, all of whom lived through, you know, unprecedented Republican obstruction. All of them experienced the frustrations of that. They've all gone through two midterm shellackings. You know, politics are not static. You learn as circumstances change.
You'd hope.
One hopes. If you look right now with what's going on with the courts, I think Republicans are doing everything they can to almost force the issue in both the courtrooms where they're issuing these insane rulings, curtailing the right to vote. They're actually the courts under especially Trump's judges have become active in participants in voter suppression as opposed to okaying it. And, you know, this shambolic process with Barrett, it makes it very, very hard for the kind of institutionalists to argue that things are okay and that we can just go ahead and go along as things were. Do I have you for four more minutes, Oliver?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah.
All right. Let me shift gears a little bit, though. There are various theories of what happens if Trump loses in his position in the right-wingosphere.
Yeah.
Your thoughts? What happens to the right after Trump?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of two things. He's got a very strong base that will stay with him forever, right? But it's a small portion of the right. It's maybe, say, 10 million people, right? And this is enough that will sustain him through whatever crazy project he comes up with after the presidency. Some, you know, a TV network, a YouTube channel, whatever it is of him just yelling into the void, people buying Trump products forever and ever. But what I really think, especially if he loses in a giant shellacking to Biden, but if he loses in any form, I think that most of the Republican Party is just going to abandon him. It's going to be like George W. Bush once Iraq got really bad. Once Iraq got really bad, Democrats took the House in 2006. Basically, George W. Bush disappeared. He hasn't been to a convention in 14 years, right? Like the sitting two-term president of the Republican Party hasn't been to a convention in 14 years. And I think that is basically what's going to happen with Trump. I feel that like the Republican Party is going to go, oh, well, that was a crazy period. Let's move on to opposing the Biden agenda forever and ever and whoever comes after. And we're just going to, they're just going to pretend that Trump just didn't happen. It just, you know, it was a figment of all our imaginations. We had a fever dream for 4 years, some crazy stuff happened, and then we can go back to complaining about Biden spending too much money. And like, and Trump will try to, you know, try to push against that because his ego won't allow him to disappear, and he's going to keep yelling. But I think they're just going to mostly ignore him, like, especially if he's a loser. If he has the stink of loser on him, that is one thing the Republicans cannot stand more than anything in the world. If you have the stink of loser on you, they will drop you in a hot minute.
I think you underestimate the share of the Republican base that is kind of Trump, you know, cultists. And the reason that I say that is that there is a significant share of Trump supporters who see in him like their entire lifetime of grievance. Right. And this is the guy they've been waiting for forever. You saw it with all of these kind of white supremacist whack jobs coming out of the woodwork. A lot of those people hadn't voted for a long time.
Sure.
I totally agree with the that the Republican establishment will abandon him quickly and pretend that he was a liberal Democrat the whole time. Right. He never wanted that. Right. He was
They'll say he was a registered Democrat. We don't know. That'll be their first go-to. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you about the disaffected folks, but like, I don't know. Like, I just feel that like so much of that is the bandwagon effect.
I think it's 25% of the population.
I probably think it's closer to 15. It's a non insignificant amount.
No.
But like, We'll see. I mean, hopefully we're in a world where we can actually play out these theories, right? Because that means that we won.
So. Yeah. Yes. Let's hope we can test these things out.
Yeah.
I will just say this in a last positive thought, because I'm trying to be, you know, positive. Everything's crazy. getting back to this idea, this fear that I have of losing the midterms, there is a distinct possibility that Trump will, if he loses, continue to lob bombs from the sidelines, and that this will hurt Republicans by keeping him the figurehead for the party and keeping the Democratic base energized even after they win, because he's not going away and he's eligible in 2024.
Yeah, in a strange way, he could be like Hillary Clinton is for the Democrats. Because think about it. Hillary, even before she was running for president, she was their forever boogeyman, and she will always be their boogeyman. Even when Obama was president, Hillary was their number one boogeyman, right? And they use her in ads now. Like, Trump is running ads that have Hillary in them now, and Republican Senate candidates. And so, yeah, I think you're perfectly right that, like, I could see a scenario where not even at the midterms, but 5-10 years down the line, you know, Democrats are still able to say, do you want to go back to the Trump years? And Trumpism. Then, you know, yeah. And they'll show a red hat and it'll be like, everyone will have PTSD when they see the red hat.
I hope Democrats stop calling it the Roberts Court and start calling it the Trump Court.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Really, that's what they need to do. Oliver Willis, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Folks, check out Oliver's work at AmericanIndependent.com. I'd also like to thank Liz Prezza and David Edwards, our producer and engineer. I'd like to thank the good folks at Alternet and Raw Story for supporting this podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, I'd like to thank all of you good people for tuning in. Think about voting in person. Stay safe. And have a good week.
Oh, well, it looks like I lost you today. Oh, my, I thought you were here to stay. This mess you made on people soon just fade away. Well, I refuse to follow. Don't come back tomorrow. I said that I would never. Step in.